This is the Spurs Cast with your host, Paul Garcia.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurs Cast. Today's episode, I will be speaking with Project Spurs writer Colin Reed. In today's episode, Colin and I will discuss the Spurs in their last three games and the early details that are reported about the new CBA agreement between the NBA and the NBA Players Association. Let's jump right into this episode with Colin. Colin, how you doing?
I am doing well. You know, I think I talk a lot about like efficiency. I post graphs on Twitter. I talk about the CBA. And just to give like people a little background on like how bad it is. I was up last night at like 11 p.m. I was like, okay, this is the deadline. I had a little whiskey. I was on speakerphone with my brother and we were like refreshing the timeline. And then it hit midnight and I was like, I'm going to bed. But then he was like, if you're awake at any hour of the night, text me whatever happened. So we turned it into a little event and we were like, no one else is talking about it. But it's been exciting to start to see the details leak out through the day. This is something that really is exciting for me. And it's interesting because the NBA has become so transactional in terms of what fans care about. And this is going to impact every aspect of that for fans. So, you know, it's kind of fun to get a little bit of an early picture on the rules are just changing. They're going to be similar, but they're changing, which is kind of exciting for us.
For sure, Colin. So, so listeners, if you all want to know what's going on with the NBA and the NBAPA, it's that, like Colin said, they had until March 31st to, you know, at least to come to some sort of verbal agreement. If not, there was a chance that, you know, if there was a disagreement, well, then we could end up with, you know, down the road a lockout like we've had in previous years. And there was no chance of that happening, most likely from the details. So they did come into a verbal agreement on a decision. And so the thing that the hard part, though, is that the details are getting leaked out very slowly by all the, you know, the main reporters like Woj, Shams, Bobby Marks, those kind of reporters. So again, Colin and I, do you want to note, we'll give a timestamp. We're recording on a Saturday evening at 8:30 Mountain Time, because like we said, there's going to be new details coming out that maybe we didn't address, but we at least want to go into what's been reported so far and how that's going to mainly focus on how does that impact Spurs short term, you know, what's going to be some of the immediate changes we're going to see in San Antonio. So before we do that, Colin, dive into the new CBA agreement. Let's first talk about the Spurs. You know, so the season's almost over, man. Five more games. They're on a 6 losing. Let's just go through the last three games. We won't go into too much detail because, again, they were losses. So we go back to Sunday. The Spurs are on the road at Boston. They lose by 44 points. This was a close game until midway through the third quarter. Then Boston goes up by 15, and the lead balloons all the way to 47 points. And so the spur of the game on this night for San Antonio was Zach Collins. Then on Wednesday, the Spurs had a chance to win a game. They lost at home their final game in the AT&T Center for this season by 11. It was close until 3 minutes into the fourth. Then Utah goes up by 19. San Antonio pushed late to get within 7, but the Utah held on. This one was crazy for Talen Horton Tucker. He went off for 41 points against San Antonio. The Jazz were only favored by 2 because, just like the Spurs, they were sitting out a lot of their players due to injury or rest. And the best player for San Antonio this night was Devontae Graham. And then the most recent loss, Colin, came on Friday. The Spurs are on the road at Golden State. They actually, you know, if you betted on this game, you lost some money last night. So the Warriors were favored by 17.5, and they ended up winning by just 15. San Antonio actually played a very rising game, considering they had Vassell out, they had Jeremy Sochan out, Zach Collins was out. So there was a lot of players out for San Antonio. They kept it close with Golden State. And then in the fourth quarter, Golden State kind of took control. They went up by 18, and then, you know, they walked off the floor with a comfortable win. Gorgui Dieng had a good night for San Antonio off the bench with 14 points and 10 rebounds in just 17 minutes of play. So, again, Colin, the Spurs weren't expected to win these games. They've had multiple players out due to injury almost every night now. What are your thoughts on them going 0-3 in these last three games?
Yeah, I wrote a piece early in the season about how the Spurs are rebuilding and not tanking, because I thought, you know, it matters the words that we use. And a big part of my argument was the Spurs are going to get out talented every night, but they're going to execute. Yeah. They're not going to do some of these like big tanking things like shutting players down and having players sit out for long stretches of time with like tiny little injuries. And somewhere around halfway through the year, that changed. And like that's kind of been the story for a lot of the year. You know, we saw Devin Vassell get shut down for a long patch of time. And some of these are probably very real, but it definitely is one of those things where it's like, if there's any risk of playing on an injury, making it worse for these players, they have no incentive to do so. So like early on in the year, they were losing, but they were competitive every time. And now, you know, over the past couple months, it's definitely been just a thing of like, well, when they're at full health, they're losing close, but they've just been so depleted. And some of it is like, as someone who's just looking from the outside in, like how much of this is real versus how much of this is like strategic sitting. I think the only other point of note is, and you know, you see a 47 point lead by the Celtics that ends up in a 44 point game and stuff like that. The only game, you know, I look at these games and I analyze them. I'm not sitting here rooting for outcomes, but you know, the idea that Wednesday's game was Pop's last game at the AT&T Center ever is on the table. And I mm-hmm. was hoping that the tanking Spurs could maybe pull that one out for him, just in terms of, can they win Pop's last game in the AT&T Center? Because he might be back next season, but he might not. So it's like, this is, mm-hmm. you know, a shot to do it. And like, it was competitive during some of it, but you know, ultimately the Jazz pulled away. So
yeah, and going back to what you brought earlier in the season, the idea that it's not just like straight up just tanking. It's like you said, they're developing, but they're just going to get out talented every night. And I think you see that in these, because I just did these visual graphics where it shows kind of like the every 6 minutes of the, or every 3 minute increment of the game. And we noticed almost like quarters 1 through 3, it's close throughout, and then of course the quarter, it just balloons away for the other team. And that's kind of been the trend. And again, it shows to what you said, just the other team just has more talent, especially with San Antonio in this place now of rest players, players on injury management kind of systems. It's just, they're getting out talented at the end of the day. But again, they're at least showing that they can be competitive for 75% of the game almost every night. It's rare that they get just blown out right from the second quarter, you know, 20 point deficit. Like mm-hmm. that doesn't really happen for this team. It's usually a gradual process where they finally just fall apart late in the game. All right. So Colin, now this team has completed 77 games. Like I mentioned earlier, there's just 5 games left. They are on a 6-game losing streak. They're 19-58 overall. They have one of the things about that Wednesday game you mentioned against the Jazz was that with that loss, it actually locked them in for a bottom three record. So now they're at the point where they have the third worst record, but Charlotte can no longer catch them to end up with the bottom three record. And they might actually be able to end up with the bottom two record if they can catch Houston. Houston won recently and the Spurs lost, so that's going to be something to watch. I think that Detroit's kind of run away with that with the worst record overall. So again, they're going to have those 40% chance lottery odds going for the number one pick for sure. All right, so now, Colin, let's go ahead and jump into the new CBA, some of the changes. So I'm going to go ahead and display this. So again, so if you're listening on audio, thank you for listening. If you're watching the video, this is where you're going to see a lot more of the details that Colin and I are going to go over. So what I have here is some of the main bullet points that are coming from, I want to give credit to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, Shams Charani of The Athletic, Bobby Marks of ESPN, and also what's the other ESPN reporter who's real plugged into this stuff? Tim Bontemps has been really plugged into this. So this is where I'm getting all of the information from, their articles and their tweets. So the notable changes to the new CBA agreement, and it is good for 7 years coming up once they get in on paper and agreement. And there is an opt-out after year 6. So the first thing, let's talk about, and I have all the things displayed here, mainly by bullet points of what's important. But the ones that are underlined are what's going to kind of impact the Spurs, can impact the Spurs immediately. That's why I put them, I underline these. So let's go for the first one, Colin. This is a penalty for tax teams. So there's now going to be a second salary cap apron if a team goes $17.5 million over the tax line with major patients for high spending teams. So these are teams like the Warriors, like the Clippers, teams that just, you know, are way overspenders. So some implications if you do that is that there's not going to be no tax. 2 years ago when Patty Mills went and signed with the Brooklyn Nets when they were a tax team, that would not be possible now with these new rules. They can't use cash in a trade in trades. They can't move first round picks that 7 years away. That one doesn't sound too I wasn't sure if that's exactly what they wanted to write. Maybe explain that one a little bit better to me, because I wasn't really understand that one too well. They're not allowed to sign free agents in the buyout market, these tax teams, and then they also can't take on money in trades that's less money that's being set out. So they can't acquire more money if they're sending out a player, that kind of system. So this does impact the Spurs because they're going to be a team right now that has a lot of cap space. So they're not a tax team, but they are a team who can trade with other tax teams. And also, like, if they're one of their veteran players wanted to go on the buyout market, well, now that veteran player can go and sign with one of these championship contenders. So that kind of eliminates some of that process. What are your thoughts on that first update about the tax teams?
So that is a huge development. And just real quick, because Eric Pincus, another guy who's really plugged in, he had a tweet. And this is, you know, this is all the caveats that you said. But again, you know, we just want to remind folks so that we're not, you know, in 6 months, people are like, well, you said it this way. He said, and, you know, he is super plugged in with all the machination to this stuff. He's helped teams understand the cap. He said, we don't have anything close to the full details yet. And some items may not even be agreed upon, with major points just locked in. What I get, or what gets reported and what is usually is a gap and we'll see what ends up being truly what is. And one thing that we've already seen with that, and that we're going to get to here in a bit, is the in-season tournament reward was being reported 500,000.
Yeah.
And then today on the Woj pod, Woj was like, no, that has not been agreed to yet. Like, that number hasn't been agreed to yet. So some of these things might change a little bit. I think the 7 years away, so right now you can trade draft picks up to 7 years in the future. So now if a team has had the second apron, if I'm understanding this correctly, they can only trade picks up to 6 years in the future. So that would be like when the new league calendar hits, most teams could trade their 2030 pick, but teams that hit the second apron could only trade their 2029. And the reason why that becomes really impactful is because you need at least one draft pick in back-to-back years. So if there's a team that hit the second apron, but they have all their own draft picks and they want to make the Godfather offer, which has generally been four picks plus pick swaps, they can't do that anymore. They can only do three picks plus pick swaps. So all of a sudden, their ability to make the Godfather offer, which is also limited in all of the other ways that we're seeing here, they would need to take back less money than they're sending out, which if you're acquiring a superstar player would be hard, all that kind of stuff. But they can only send out three picks in trades when they're at the second apron, even if they have all their picks. So that really restricts the ability of these teams that have hit the second apron to make trades. And when you look at not only that, but them not being able to use the tax MLE, them not being able to use cash in trades, not being able to sign free agents on the buyout market, teams that are on the second apron, I'm not going to say they don't have any avenue to get better, but their avenues to get better are much smaller. Now, here's a really interesting wrinkle. The buyout is not something in the CBA. It's a combination of two different functions that come together. One is that you can waive a player at any time. And another one is that a player and a team can come together and decide to reduce the amount of guaranteed money that a player is owed. And those two things happening at the same time is what we call a buyout. But there can be free agents that haven't been signed on the market at any time. So how are they going to restrict, my question, the buyout market? Are they going to say you can't sign any players after a certain date? That would be kind of crazy. Are they going to say you can't sign any players that were waived from other teams? Like, that might be what they're going for. Like,
yeah, I think that's what they're going for.
Yeah. So that vagueness there could be very interesting. It probably is going to be the more conservative one there. But yeah, they don't have a whole lot of options if you're in that second tier to get much better. So there's always a lot of unintended consequence, but I think the hope is that this will bring some more parity to the league, this first point in particular.
Exactly. From my interpretation, it's like if you're gonna build these superstar teams where you're putting two or three stars together, like the Clippers with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, well then hey, it's gonna be hard to fill out your role players and the your team. And so that's gonna make these teams not tear away from doing that model just because and like again, the reason why I think it does impact the Spurs, again, we don't think that the Spurs will be a tax team. They're long from that. But the fact that like sitting up veteran players, like, you know, to go to be a buyout player and then go play somewhere else, like those kind of that's going to change a little bit differently. And also because San Antonio's going to have a cap room, they can be a team. It's going to change that they do trades even with tax. So that's why I think that is important and it is a concern San Antonio. All right, Colin, let's go to the next two bullet points here. There's going to be larger trade exceptions for teams in the middle and lower end of the payroll. So right now, San Antonio is more so in the lower end of the payroll. We haven't got the specific details of what it means. And then also there's new and expanded exceptions. So there's going to be 7.5% increase to the MLE. This would have fallen to that. They're not projected to this coming summer. But the one I want to talk about is what will impact the Spurs is there's going to be a 30% increase to the room exception. So again, we expect the Spurs to have space this offseason. So that means that they're going to have access to that $5.8 million room exception. If this 30% increase happens, well, then now that $5.8 million goes to $7.6 million that San Antonio can offer to a free agent. And again, I think that just makes it more attractive to free agents that, you know, yeah, they see the Spurs are this bottom three team who are currently rebuilding, but it gives them more incentive because it's more money to maybe come into San Antonio, be a veteran presence in that locker room or take a position that Spurs need to be filled. What are your thoughts on those two changes?
Yeah, so going to the trade exception, that one is really interesting. And I have a couple ideas on what that could mean, because with what trade exceptions are right now, it doesn't actually really make any sense. So trade exceptions, as most of the time when you hear someone say trade exceptions, what they're talking about is a non-simultaneous trade where one team trades another player into cap space, and the team that didn't receive anything back gets a trade exception of the size of that player. Now, it doesn't really make sense to put a multiplier on that. Like, oh, well, if you trade 10 million into space, if you're a low to middle team, now you actually get a $12 million trade exception, because they said that the their specific verbiage was something like the trade and the free agent exceptions will be better for teams in the middle to low end of the payrolls. So this, what I'm about to say would be crazy. It might be far out there. It might sound stupid in July 1st or even in an hour, but I'm wondering if they're going to make it where you can take on players in trades using the room exception or the MLE, because that wasn't allowed before.
Yeah, correct.
So I'm wondering if this larger trade exceptions for teams in the middle to low end is more of the MLE or the room exception can actually be used as a trade exception, because with the MLE and the room exception both increasing, and let's say hypothetically they did allow it to be a trade exception, that would match the reporting that we've heard of free agent exceptions and trade exceptions are going up for these low end teams are going to be the room exception, and the middle teams are going to be the MLE. So that kind of strikes all the bases in one quick thing, and that's kind of what I'm thinking might be going on, which would be really cool. That would be a fairly big change, honestly, if you could use the MLE as a trade exception. But just because the language has been so vague, that's been my best guess at what's happening there. Now, for the Spurs to even use the room exception, they do have to, like,
use their cap space first.
yeah, that's what
Just thought about
I
that.
don't.
They didn't even use the room exception for this season because they're still like, what, like 9 or 10 million.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Below the cap at this, like, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe if they get a high pick and they start like gunning for it, maybe that 7.6 million could be, very useful to sign a veteran who's interested in playing with like a young team that has some upside, and they fill out all of the roster and now they need to use a room exception. I'm not seeing that, but it's possible. And it's one of those things where it's good to have underlined, because it probably doesn't affect them this year, but it probably will the year after or the year after that. Like, this is going to come to bear fruit for the Spurs in the near future, even if it doesn't this year.
For sure, I totally agree there, and I'm like you said, we haven't got the details on the trade exception, but I am wondering if they are going to allow access to those exceptions to be used, like the MLE or the room MLE, because they haven't been able to be used in that situation in the past. All right, the next one, I didn't underline this one, but let's just go through it. It says to be eligible for end of season awards such as the MVP and All NBA teams, a player must play in 65 games. Now this is more so targeted toward the stars who are, they're the fact that they're always sitting out games, or they're hurt, or they're resting for games. Again, this doesn't really impact the Spurs, because right now they don't really have a player that's projected to be like, an All-NBA player right now with the roster that they have together. So again, that's just something to watch for the future case. Well, maybe, maybe one of these current Spurs players does have a breakout season next year. But right now, none of their players look like they're on that trajectory. Here that's going to impact San Antonio. There's going to be, like you said, they haven't said for sure if it's going to happen next season, but they are agreeing on an in-season tournament. And so if it does happen next year, it could happen most likely in November. And so I think this one's important for San Antonio, because even if they are a rebuilding team, and let's just say they're going to go for another tank, let's say they don't get Victor Wembanyama, they end up just for another tank season. Well, hey, at least that's something to be at least somewhat more competitive for November, just to see if, hey, can you win an in-season tournament or get close to that, and that make that be like the prior season, rather than just going through a whole season where you're going to win like 19 games like this current season. What are your thoughts on the in-season tournament if it does happen in November?
Yeah, so I have a couple of thoughts regarding the Spurs specifically, because it's really, really interesting to think about the timing of this for the Spurs. So I think that in 10 seasons, if it's still around, that means it's a success. And if it's still around in 10 seasons, I think it will have gained meaning to be, because they're going to give this a name. You know, I don't even know, but like the Michael Jordan Cup or whatever, right? It's going to be something to be the champion of the Michael Jordan Cup. It's not going to be that right now, but it might mean that, or they might just go like the WNBA route and call it the Commissioner's Cup. It's not going to mean that right at first, but if it continues to be existing, it's going to matter to teams later on down the road. And, you know, people at $500,000, like, you know, if you're a minimum player making less than $2 million, that's like a 20% bonus right there, which is pretty cool. And I, you know, on the Woj pod today, they brought up a really good point of the fact that like every single game in this tournament, except for the final four or the final three games, but like the final four teams are regular season games. So it's not like teams are going to go like, oh, this is part of the tournament. Well, I'm going to lose this game on purpose now. Like, that's ridiculous. And if you're one of the final four teams and you go to Vegas, they're not going to be like, well, I don't want to win this, so I'm going to throw this game. Like, if you get there, you're going to try. Now, earlier on in the season, the Spurs won like four of their first six or four of their first seven.
Yeah.
And like, I think, so here, my crazy galaxy brain thing is, even if the Spurs are bad again next year, I think that before people care about this as much, early on in the season, when the Spurs are playing all their guys, everyone's fresh, they have this new lottery, high lottery talent, I think they have a chance to like sneak in there. If they can have a start of the year like they did this year, and if you get in there, it's single elimination. If they make it to the final four in Vegas, like, anything's on the table. So it's going to be really crazy, because I think in the future, I think teams are going to care enough where you're going to see those, like, the mid-tier playoff teams to the championship contenders are going to be the teams that are really competing for this. But I think the first couple of years, you can have some like young teams sneak in there. It's going to be exciting from that perspective. And I think it's going to be a really cool, like, I mean, you're going to get, like, for so long we complained Warriors Cavs every finals, right? But now we're going to have whatever it's called, Commissioner's Cup or whatever, Kings versus Cavs, these two exciting young teams in the finals on TV, you know, and like, that might not be exciting for the guy that only likes the Lakers or whatever, but like, it's going to be a spectacle of these teams that normally wouldn't get to be on that big stage. And so I think that while teams don't care about this as much, because I think that the care will come, I think the Spurs have an opportunity to sneak in there this year. And if 500,000, the Spurs salaries right now, 500,000 would be a nice bonus for any of those players. The Spurs have a very, each player's salary is pretty low compared to average.
Yeah, no, for, I mean, I totally agree with you there. And in fact, like I said, the reason why I think San Antonio could like sneak in there, be a competitive team, is just because, like you said, the way they started off this year, they caught teams off guard. They were healthy. You know, we didn't really know what kind of team this was. And so I think that gives them a good chance to at least be competitive in that kind of thing. And it's something in there where, yes, if they're going to end up having a bad season overall, well, then, hey, it's something prideful to try to fight for early on in the season. I think there's more incentive for that as well. All right, so let's go to the next details. So this for the Spurs, because they have a lot of right now even players on their current rookie contracts, but they're going to be free agents down the road. And so this is the change from extensions can go from 120% to 140%. So like I said, we're going to have some Spurs players coming up on their extensions a few years from now. Devin Vassell, Malachi Branham, Jeremy Sohan, Blake Leslie. So if the Spurs see that these are players that they want to try to retain long-term on their team, they don't just have to go to 120% of the cap now. They're going to have that 140% increase of their previous contracts. What are your thoughts on that new detail?
So just a quick note on that is, this is for veteran extensions. So rookie extensions, you can do anything already.
So maybe like a player like Zach Collins, right? That would fit.
Yes.
That
he would fit. Yes. Yeah. So I think really two really good examples where, if you're a cynical person, you might just say the Spurs were giving excuses and they were going to trade these players anyway. But two really recent examples were DeJounte Murray and Jakob Poeltl, where when the Spurs traded them, the intel that they put out there to kind of like CYA was, well, you know, we really like these players and they were really good in our system, but we were only able to offer them 120% extension. And we knew they weren't going to accept that because they're better than that now. So this increase, you know, it's a double increase, but I don't honestly, for a player like DeJounte Murray on the contract he was on, or Jakob Poeltl on the contract he was on, I don't even know if 140% of their last year was enough for those two players. But like you said, a Zach Collins, who the Spurs kind of rehabbed his career, like there are going to be players where 120% was not enough, but 140% will be enough. So yeah, these veteran extensions, I think, are going to get done more often. I actually would have loved to see that number even higher, but I also understand that there's a little bit of wanting to protect teams from their own mistakes here.
Okay. Yeah. So thank you for clarifying that. Again, that's why I'm glad you were on here too. That's why I knew that, you know, you mean both know the CBA is so good to really confirm some of those details there. All right. So the next one, this is going to impact the Spurs, is there's going to now be three two-way roster spots available. We know that right now the Spurs have two players on two ways. They have Dominic Barlow and Julian Champagne. We've seen that as this year has progressed, Barlow's gone from Austin to now the San Antonio team, because they just need bodies at this point, like player play games. And so it's good to see, you know, Barlow get minutes, Champagne minutes here in these last 10-12 games of the year. And so now, you know, they're going to have the ability to maybe use their second round pick in the spot like they did with Barlow, or maybe they even can just, you know, someone pops off in their summer league, they could add that player to their team. And then, so this assuming that, I guess, they're going to add an additional roster spot. I don't think they would take a guaranteed roster spot away. So teams will go from 17 roster spots to now 18 roster spots. What are your thoughts on that change about the 2-way picks?
Yeah, that's, again, really good timing for the Spurs. You know, assuming they don't touch the roster spots in a negative way on the guaranteed roster spots. Obviously, if I would assume we would have heard about this if this were part of it. If they increase the guaranteed roster spots, that's even better for the Spurs. But, you know, they're in this rebuilding situation. You know, a really salient point to me is Robert Covington, who I remember Ben Falk of Cleaning the Glass wrote a good article on. When the 76ers signed Covington, there was a lot of like very cynical media kind of hit pieces out there that were like, look at the 76ers. They're signing another player that no one's heard of just to tank worse. And it was like, no, like we care about these players so that when we're good, we want to find players who are going to hit and match with those things. And like Robert Covington has been like a very vital role player on a lot of teams. And so I think every tool that a rebuilding team gets to find more rotational players for their next playoff iteration is a wonderful tool. Like, how often is that two-way guy going to hit in terms of like, now they're a super rotational player? I'm not sure, but the more chances you have at hitting at that, the better odds you have that it will hit. So just a really, really good tool for the Spurs as they're rebuilding. Like you said, as long as they don't kind of touch the roster in any other way, very fortuitous that this happened right now, because the Spurs will continue to get the opportunity to like test guys around, you know, like they might take their two-way guys this year, promote them to the main roster, and now they have three free spaces that they can use however they want, which is really exciting. So yeah, I think wonderful for the Spurs in terms of their rebuild.
For sure. I agree with you there. All right. The last two details. So the caps, there's going to be some caps moving up to 10% after each season, avoiding a cap spike. So we won't see one of those situations like where Kevin Durant ended up on the Golden State Warriors. Again, because the Spurs aren't really contenders at this point, that's not really as impactful for them. It's just notable that, you know, that there's a chance that salaries will be going up each summer. And then lastly, all NBA teams will be positionless. And again, that one, we don't project any of the Spurs players to be on an all NBA team next season, but it just shows that, just the fact that the NBA understands that, yes, you know, at this point of the season, I mean, these rosters are just positions, no longer traditional center, a power forward, a point guard, those kind of things. And so we even see it with the current Spurs team where Pop throws out these different lineups and we don't even blink an eye at that at any point. Oh, we see the one, the three, that kind of thing. It's just like we kind of just understand that's kind of how basketball is. You know, any thoughts on those last two?
Yeah, well, the All-NBA team thing, I think, is really, really significant. In a good way. You know, I think there's going to be some times where it's like, oh, this doesn't even resemble it. But does it need to resemble a team? I would rather have the All-NBA team be the 15 best players in the league.
Yes, yes.
2016, the Warriors won 73 games. LeBron James won a championship. The Spurs won 67 games. The first team center was DeAndre Jordan. Like, sometimes one position has not quite as much depth as the other positions. Like the year where one team won 73 games, LeBron kind of tore through his conference and ended up beating the Warriors, and the Spurs won 67 games. I would imagine there would be other candidates for a first team All-NBA player if that were positionless. And I think anyone would say, well, the reason why DeAndre Jordan, who was really good at the time, but not like we think now of like the All-NBA centers this year are going to be like Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, Anthony Davis. And like, obviously this is a very different tier of player, right? So like, just because we have these positions for no real reason other than make it look like a real team, even though they never play together, it's not the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
You have a situation where the five best players in the league were not the five first team All-NBA players, which is just kind of a silly thing. So I'm very happy about this because I would like to see what the media comes together and says, these are what we think are the best 15 players, because that is more interesting than who's the best three centers, who are the best six guards, who are the best six forwards.
Yeah, no, exactly. I wondered too if they would maybe do that too for the All-Star team, and they said they are going to, but because I think that's another issue too, where players that are having way better seasons end up getting left off just because the positions that the fans have to vote on and the coaches have to vote on are already filled. It's like there's just not enough spots. So I wonder if they're gonna, because like we said, details are still emerging, so maybe that might be an option. All right, Colin, our last topic here, just before we close out that segment. So again, SpursCast listeners, those are just the details that have been reported so far on new changes to CBA. Again, none of this is locked in until these actual details are written out and the document actually gets published. So that hasn't happened yet. We'll continue to see more details come out in the future. And Colin and I would definitely visit those once they do come out in the future. All right, so now, Colin, let's go to our last topic here. And this is the Hall of Fame announcement. I wasn't, you know, for me, it wasn't too, too surprising to see any of these players and coaches this list. I mean, these were all great players, coaches. So let's go ahead and begin. The details that I got are from the actual Hall of Fame website. So the 2023 Hall of Fame will be taking place this fall. So the announced players and coaches are Coach Pop for the Spurs. You know, of course, he's going to be in winningest head coach in NBA history, three-time NBA coach, five-time NBA champion. No surprise there. Tony Parker, six-time All-Star, four-time NBA champion, 2007 Finals MVP. Becky Hammon, he was in her WNBA career, six-time WNBA All-Star, two-time first-team All-NBA WNBA recipient. We know that she was also one of the first few coaches in the NBA. We also know that she just won a title in the WNBA with her team in Las Vegas this past season. And then Pau Gasol, though these accolades are more so for his career with the Lakers, we do want to know, you know, what he did in his time. Six-time All-Star, two-time NBA champion, 2002 Rookie of the Year were the notes, his accolades there. So again, the list isn't too surprising to me. It's going to be a really cool event to watch, though, in the fall. Again, I really like Monte Ginobili's recently, Tim Duncan's Hall of Fame celebration last year. I mean, the years past. So I think that it's a really cool time to see when basketball's not happening. I think it's like in September, August, those Hall of Fame inductions. What are your thoughts on all four the players and the coaches getting in?
Yeah, so very exciting. You know, I think that Becky and Pau were like with the team for, you know, a good bit shorter time, and obviously, like, I think Pau had a very positive impact on the team that wasn't noticed by a lot of fans. I think just his like leadership, and I think that his play was underrated by fans, all that kind of stuff. And Becky, you know, beloved by the fans, a lot of people were hoping that she would take over as head coach when Pop retired. Mm-hmm. That aside, I think that there is some level of satisfaction to see that Coach Pop plus the big three. Like this, you know, when we think about Spurs basketball 40 years from now, you know, we're going to think about Coach Pop and the big three. And the fact that they are now like in the Hall of Fame together, I think is just right. It like feels good. It's how it should be. I will say the one surprising one actually on there is, so with players, they have to be out of the league for a certain amount of time. I don't remember exactly how long it is. They can't be active anymore. But that's not true for coaches. And Pop has been eligible for a long time.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm.
I am just a little bit interested in that. You know, he could just be like, well, I'm the winningest coach now, so I'm going to go in. I'm hoping it's not a premonition of the news that none of us want to hear, but I'm a little bit worried that it is. So,
yeah. So that could mean, again, we don't know exactly what he's going to do this offseason. I know there's articles written almost every day about that, especially with the game. Like we said, if he does retire at the end of the season, he just had his final home game in San Antonio Wednesday, that they're going to finish off their remaining schedule on the road. And then also, of course, the two substitute home games are in Austin for the end of the year here. So again, we'll kind of keep an eye on that. He has announcement he can do this offseason. But again, I think that just in the fall, it'll be something fun to watch. It's just a really cool event to keep an eye on the Hall of Fame. I really haven't watched those in the past, but the fact that like Manu recently and Timmy was in it, and now Tony's going to be in it, Pop, Becky Hammon, even Powell, it's going to be really cool to watch that event. All right, so thank you to Colin for joining me on this episode of Spurscast, and I also want to thank Joe Garcia for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.